Go ahead and join me in 1 Samuel chapter number 5. We're going to pick up our story in verse 6. First, I want to remind you of my own chronological assumptions here. I believe that Samson and Samuel were born right around the same time, right at the beginning of the 40-year high priesthood of Eli, and right at the beginning of the 40-year oppression of the Philistines. Furthermore, I believe that Samson began his judgeship right around his 20th year of life, because it's associated with his marriage, and that seems to happen right around that general vicinity during this time period for the average Israeli male. We know his judgeship was 20 years long, and it finished with him presumably right around 40, Samuel being about the same age, when he destroyed the Dagon temple at Gaza, the southernmost of the five cities of the Philistines. So that temple is gone. I believe that the Philistines immediately wanted a reprisal. So when we start reading about the Philistine invasion in the book of 1 Samuel, that the Ark of the Covenant was lost during, and that the two sons of Eli died during, and Eli himself died after hearing that his sons were dead and the Ark was taken. I think all of that happened in those months after Samson's death and the destruction of the temple at Gaza. And I can put a date on it, approximately. I think it's probably about 1057 BC, and that it was the 400th year of the Exodus when all this happened. Furthermore, I believe that the invasion of the Philistines came during the 9th, maybe 10th month, but more likely the 9th month of that particular year. I'll explain why I believe that in a little bit farther into the story today. So once the Ark was captured, we discover from other passages the Philistines actually destroyed the tabernacle at Shiloh. Just ruined it. And that was their whole point. They wanted to get even for the destruction of the temple of Dagon at Gaza. That's my belief. So they take the ark, which is understandably a representation of the God of Israel. It's his throne. And they give that to Dagon, to his idol, at the temple in Ashdod, which is the northernmost on the coast of the cities of the Philistines. And of course, Dagon bows before the ark on the first night that he's in there. And then the second night, he loses his head and his arms, his hands. And that's when the leaders at Ashdod say, oh no, he's got to go. This thing's got to get out of here. We don't want it anymore. And we'll discover as well that they're being stricken already, the very beginnings of some sort of illness. More on that as we go. Verse number 6 now. The hand of he who is was heavy against the people of Ashdod. He terrified and afflicted them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territory. So they're getting slammed with what I think, and others think, probably the bubonic plague, because it's going to involve rodents. That'll show up later in the story. And it involves these little growths, these little tumors, as they're called. And bubonic plague presents itself with these little bubbles. They're these little tumor-like growths under the armpits. It's in the lymphatic system, or sometimes where the bite takes place from the flea. So these guys are really suffering. And they decide they got to get this thing out of their town too. They got to make it out. And so when the men of Ashdod saw how these things were, they said, "The Ark of God must not remain with us, for his hand is hard against us and against Dagon our God." So they sent and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines. That'd be five guys. And these are new guys, remember, because the original five guys of the story died in the collapse of the Temple of Dagon at Gaza. So they said, "What shall we do with the Ark of the God of Israel?" And they answered, "Well, let the Ark of God of Israel be brought down to Gath." So they brought the Ark of God of Israel there. So Gath is a little bit farther inland from Ashdod and from Gaza and from Ashkelon. Don't know why they chose to take it there rather than to Ashkelon. Ashkelon gets skipped in this whole story. But the same things start happening there. Verse 9, "But after they brought it around, the hand of he who is was against the city, causing a very great panic. He afflicted the men of the city, both young and old, so that tumors broke out on them." So there's apparently some sort of outbreak of rodents, followed very quickly by a whole bunch of these tumors showing up. Sounds very much like bubonic plague, which has, I think, if I remember correctly, something like a 40% death rate. So very bad. So what do these guys do? Verse 10, "They sent the Ark of God to Ekron." That's the last of the five cities, other than Ashkelon, which got skipped. And it's a little bit farther north from Eglon, Gaza. It's right along that section where Samson used to live, where he used to be the judge at. It's right on that breakpoint between the full-on Philistine territory and the Israeli territory. Well, as soon as the Ark of God came to Ekron, the people of Ekron cried out, "They've brought around to us the Ark of the God of Israel to kill us and our people." So they figure they're doomed. They're all dead too. And so they sent, therefore, and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines. So there's a big emergency meeting of the five. And they said, "Send away the Ark of the God of Israel. Let it return to its own place that it may not kill us and our people." For there was a deathly panic throughout the whole city. The hand of God was very heavy there. The men who did not die were struck with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven. Now, the next verse, the beginning of chapter 6, gives us a time frame. "The Ark of He Who Is was in the country of the Philistines 7 months." So all that we were just talking about that happened with the Ark of the Covenant bouncing from Ashdod to Gath to Ekron, all of that happened in a 7-month period over, apparently, the winter months and the beginning of the spring. How do we know that? Because the next part of the story happens around the wheat harvest. The wheat harvest always happens around Pentecost. That's when it starts, which is always at the very beginning of the third Jewish month. Late spring, shall we say. So all winter and the beginning of spring, the Philistines have been suffering under God's judgment with apparently the bubonic plague. And so they've decided enough is enough. We need to release the God of the Israelites, because they think like idolaters. They believe that the idol, which represents the God, is the power base. And that power base can be moved away to a different place. And so they are concerned that they have allowed the Israeli God, represented by his throne, the Ark of the Covenant, has been ravaging them for these last 7 months. And so they need to send him home. They need to let him go and quit holding him hostage. Verse 2. The Philistines called for the priests and the diviners. So this is all a religious thing. So that's who they want to talk to. What shall we do with the ark of he who is? Tell us with what we shall send it to its place. And they said, if you send away the ark of the God of Israel, don't send it away empty, but by all means return him a guilt offering. So basically, don't send the God of the Israelis home empty-handed. Give him something of value to show that you are sorry for keeping him here this long. That's the religious thinking of the Philistines. Then you will be healed, and it will be known to you why his hand does not turn away from you. And so they said, well, what's the guilt offering that we should return to him? And they answered, 5 golden tumors and 5 golden mice, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines, for the same plague was on all of you and on your lords. So the baseline, I'm sorry, or we're sorry, donation to he who is going to be 5 golden representations of these tumors, these little growths, and then 5 golden mice, 5 golden rodent forms. Now, we'll discover later that these 5 golden mice represent the actual capital cities of the 5 Philistine city-states. And the 5 golden tumors of those 5 city-state headquarters. Later, there will be more of the tumors, not just 5, but a multitude of them to represent all the different cities that have been impacted by this plague. Verse number 5, so you must make images of your tumors and images of your mice that ravage the land, and give glory to the God of Israel. Perhaps he will lighten his hand off you and your gods and your land. Now, the gods reference there is, we know at least one idol was lost where Dagon bowed and then was broken. The text doesn't tell us that that happened at Gath, but it's possible that it did. And it's possible that it happened at the next site as well, Ekron. Maybe he even fell over in the Ashkelon temple of Dagon. We don't know. But they feel that they've got to send the Israeli God home before he does any more damage to themselves, their gods, and their land. Verse number 6. Why should you harden your hearts as the Egyptians and Pharaoh hardened their hearts? Interesting, they know Israeli history. They know that about 400 years ago, the God of the Israelis completely ruined the Egyptian economy and killed the firstborn of all the Egyptian families. And they don't want to mess with him. He is clearly a very powerful god, and they're second guessing that they should have ever taken his throne into their territory. After he dealt severely with them, they did not send the people away, and they departed. In other words, after God broke Egypt, that's when the Israelis left. You want to have something similar happen here? So verse 7, now then, take and prepare a new cart, so a nice virgin cart, and two milk cows, meaning cows that are nursing calves. That's the idea. On which there has never come a yoke. So they've never worked inside a yoke. That's important. They're virgin in that sense. They've never been work cows. So take two never been yoked cows that are currently nursing their babies, hitch them up to a very brand new cart, and then take their calves home away from them. So pin their calves away, and then take the Ark of He Who Is, place it on the cart, put in a box at its side with the figures of gold, which you're returning to him as a guilt offering, then send it off and let it go away, and then watch. Now, this is the recommendation of the religious leadership of the Philistine five-city alliance. They want to make sure that it really is the God of the Israelis doing this. So stack the deck against this cart on which you put the ark going away. And then if it does go away, that's a pretty good indicator that God wants it that way, that this Yahweh God has taken control of the situation. If it goes up on the way to its land, to Beth Shemesh, now Beth Shemesh is very close to Ekron. It is on the way up toward the center of Israeli community life now, which is at Mitzpah and Gibeon, places like that, south of Shiloh, because Shiloh's been destroyed. They've kind of pulled down into this protected area at the heart of southern Ephraim, northern Benjamin. So Beth Shemesh is on the way that direction. So if it takes off that direction, and then he goes, then it is he who has done this great harm to us. If not, then we shall know that it was not his hand that struck us. It just happened to us by coincidence. So if the cows just go back to their calves that are pinned up, if the cows refuse to go anywhere, they just kind of stand there, then obviously the God of Israel is not involved in this, and it's just an accident. It's just one of those freak things that happens. So the men did so. They took the two milk cows, and they yoked them to the cart. They shut up their calves at home. They put the Ark of He Who Is on the cart. Now, some people always ask, well, why wasn't God striking them dead for touching the Ark of the Covenant? Well, they're not Israelis, so that was more of the warning given to the Israelis. Plus, he wants the Ark brought back. He wants it brought back into Israeli territory, and this is the mechanism of having that happen. So they also put on the Ark the box with the golden mice, and the images of their tumors. And the cows went straight in the direction of Beth Shemesh along one highway, lowing as they went. So they're bawling, they're crying out for their babies because their babies are pinned up. And under normal circumstances, A mama cow would never leave its brand new baby. But these are not normal circumstances. This is supernatural. This is to prove to first the Philistines, but also in a way to the Israelis, God's in control. And so they turned neither to the right nor the left. The lords of the Philistines went after them as far as the border of Beth Shemesh. Now, Beth Shemesh is the beginning of Israeli territory at this time. This is the transition zone from the Philistine plain to the Shephelah, or the foothill country of Israeli hill country. Now we get a little dating. Verse 13. Now the people of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley. So that's how we know it's at least the third month of the Jewish year, possibly the fourth month, and even at the outside, it could have been the fifth month. So it would seem to me that it's much more likely very early in the wheat harvest season, so right at the beginning of the third month, and that means that the capture of the ark must have happened back in the ninth month of the previous year. That reprisal of the Philistines happened right at the end of the fall, just before winter set in. The people of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the field when they lifted up their eyes and saw the ark, because they would have heard the cows bawling, crying, and there it is. These two cows that are making such a big racket are pulling a cart, and on it is the unsheathed Ark of the Covenant, just out there in the open. And they rejoiced to see it, because they grieved over it 9 months earlier. They lost their two working priests. They lost their high priest. They lost the Ark of the Covenant. But now, here it is, coming all by itself. Here comes the throne of God on this cattle cart, this cow cart. And the cart came into the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh and stopped there. So probably we're talking about on the west side of the city. A great stone was there. They split up the wood of the cart and offered the cows as a burnt offering to He Who Is, which, again, it's kind of interesting because we're in the period of the judges. Everybody just made up their own rules. They're not supposed to be offering sacrifices away from the tabernacle, but, you know, the tabernacle doesn't exist right now. We're not sure exactly where they set up alternate worship services. Eventually, the tabernacle will be reestablished at Gibeon, but here they offer a thanksgiving offering spontaneously using the items of the cart and the cows to do so. And then when the five lords of the Philistines saw it, you know, they saw this all happening from a distance, they realized that what their soothsayers, their spiritual leaders told them came to pass. Apparently, the God of Israel wanted released from captivity. And so he's back home again, and they're like, gladly he's gone. And so they returned that day back to Ekron and no doubt engaged in their own little religious ceremonies. And then they probably hoped that the plague would end. We're not told. But certainly over time it would have burned out. Verse 17, these are the golden tumors that the Philistines returned as a gift, guilt offering to He Who Is, one for Ashdod, one for Gaza, one for Ashkelon, one for Gath, one for Ekron, and then the golden mice. And I actually reversed that a while ago. Sorry for the slip of my tongue. The golden mice, there were five mice that specified these five cities of the Philistines, but they were also according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines belonging to the five lords, both fortified cities and unwalled villages. So there were these walled cities associated with each of the five cities and unwalled villages associated with all of these regions of the five city-states of the Philistines. And so we don't know what the number total was of that. The great stone beside which they set down the ark of He Who is a witness to this day in the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh. So at the time that this book was written, it was still identifiable. Now we don't know. Now he struck, that is God, struck some of the men of Beth Shemesh because they looked upon the ark of He Who is. He struck 70 of them. So apparently some of them didn't take in consideration that they were not supposed to be just looking at the unshielded ark of God. That was supposed to be a no-no. But they did it anyway. Probably got up too close, personal. And so 70 of them died. And then the people mourned because He Who Is had struck the people with a great blow. But I'm sure a whole bunch of people stayed away from that point forward. Then the men of Beth Shemesh said, "Who is able to stand before He Who Is, this holy God? And to whom shall He go up away from us?" So they sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kiriath-Jearim, saying, "The Philistines have returned the ark of He Who Is. Come down, take it up to you." Now, as we close up today on this story, I find that odd. Beth Shemesh was supposed to be an outpost for some Levitical workers. There's supposed to be Levites living here. Kohathites, actually, those that carried the ark back in time. They don't exist there. It's probably another product of it being the time of the judges. So it would appear that the closest outpost of Levites is at Kiriath-Jearim. Come back next time, and we'll get into the word with the rest of the story.